I was surprised by it.
Well, that makes a guess. She's not happy with the whole idea of the angels versus the lions.
Thinking of turning it into a more partisan kind of deal.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it is. I was asking about what she
said. Yeah.
Ready? All right. All right, I'll call that to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 17, 2017, and ask if everyone please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, one note before we get into the agenda. Under additional items, number 2, which currently reads as discussion and consideration of sub-1718 Gordy subdivision, it really, our discussion and consideration is of resolution 1849, which actually sub-1817 refers to resolution 1849, but we need to make that clear as we get started in our agenda. Yeah, go ahead.
I had a brief discussion with our clerk, Shelley, this morning about this, and had asked if anybody had talked to Jessica Reynolds about this, whether this would be okay to do the substitution.
Yeah, this is a Scribner's error. No, the answer is no, I haven't talked to Jessica. But it's a Scribner's error. Clearly, sub-1817, which is this case number, refers to resolution. We deal with Scribner's error and move it on. This would be like adding an action item or, I don't even remotely see a concern with this.
I did call and leave a message, but she had not called back. And one of the reasons I want to make sure that we've done this with comfort of our county attorney's office is that this applicant happens to be an employee of Story County. And so I want to make sure that we don't in any way end up in a situation where we're even perceived to have taken a shortcut due to
no shortcut, Scribner's error. We're noted at the top of the agenda. All the documentation refers to both Resolution 1849 and Subdivision 1817. So we're good, and we'll go with it, and I'm sure Jessica will call you back and tell you the same thing. Anything further before we get to public comment?
None.
Appreciate you discussing that. Public comment number 1, opportunities for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything. Anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one move to the microphone, we'll move on to recognition. And really, we're recognizing 2 people, but we only have 1 of them here today. Ron Smith and Michelle Hansen have both represented Story County really, really well as part of our asset volunteer board. Michelle can't be here today due to work obligations. We have Ron with us. I'll just say this. So Ron was on asset for 7 years, served as chair of the asset process. I was always really, really impressed with Ron's knowledge of financial matters, his complete preparation before every meeting, and the way when Ron would speak, that entire room, which was generally 30, 40, 50 people, would settle in and listen to what he had to say because he would really cut to the heart of the matter. Your term limited out, but we'd love to have you continue to represent us on the asset board. Ron and I were talking before the meeting. Asset is one of the truly great things that we as a community do. It's amazing the way the different entities come together, and Ron has been a great volunteer for us there. Anything to add?
Well, I'd just like to speak about the other applicant for a minute, because I do know Michelle. Okay, Michelle Hassett, or the other person.
Not applicant, right.
Sorry, yep. The other person that's retiring. And Michelle is one of the first people I met when I came here in 2002, because then she actually was with one of the agencies herself. And she was the executive director for foster grandparents, as I seem to recall. And so I appreciate, as that program transferred over, appreciate that she was willing to step in as a volunteer role to help with the funding of moving forward with social services. So anyway, thank you to her also.
Absolutely. and wish she could have been here today, but I sure understand that work gets in the way. So we have a little recognition plaque for Ron Smith. We also have one of these for Michelle, and we'll get it to her or have gotten it to her already. But this is Ron Smith in recognition and appreciation for 7 years of volunteer service representing Story County on the Asset Board, 2010 to 2017. And Ron, we really appreciate your time and energy and what you've done to make our community a better place. And with that, we'll have a photo op right here. Discussion and consideration of authorizing Story County funds allocated through the asset process to pay for services provided by the Legal Aid Society of Story County to former Crestview residents who moved to Maple Grove, which is in Boone County, as a result of the Crestview closure. Deb.
Good morning.
Morning, Deb.
I have been in discussion with Legal Aid about being able to provide services to those Crestview residents who moved to Maple Grove as a result of the Crestview closure. Just in case there are unanticipated issues that come up that they need that legal representation and legal support. So Karen Forbes, the executive director of Legal Aid, talked with her board about being able to do this since Maple Grove is in Boone County and Boone County is not part of the Legal Aid service area. And her board did approve to be able to provide those services as long as there was Story County funding available to help cover the cost of those services. So we already have dollars allocated to Legal Aid through the asset process for this fiscal year. There's a total of $91,000 out of the general fund and then $5,680 out of local option. They've drawn down some of those funds already because we started the fiscal year, but we're looking at approximately 8 residents that may or may not need those services, but because these individuals are considered Boone County residents right now, I wanted to bring this to the board to discuss and consider using Story County funds in a an exceptional way to provide those services to residents if they need the services.
Go ahead, Laura.
As I read through this, and I did see that Legal Aid serves people whose incomes are up to 125% of the federal poverty guidelines. And I was just wondering, I did the math on that from the 2017 numbers, all right, which would be an income of about $15,000 a year. And my only concern on this is that is it possible we have any one of these 8 people whose income might top $15,000 and therefore not be eligible for legal aid?
I don't know until they make applications.
Right, but I don't know that we're talking about doing anything here that would set aside Legal Aid's regular processes. This is simply, can we use any dollars for these residents? And so, Deb, I'd like to have 2 things in here, and maybe we can talk about this as a board. One, I'd like to have a time horizon. How long are we talking about? Is this in perpetuity, or is this, the rest of this fiscal year, so going through June 30, which is what I assume we're trying to do here. Second thing is, I think it's important that I'm in favor of this. I think it's important that we utilize Story County dollars if, in fact, the incident that is in question, they'd be going to legal aid for, happened either when they were residents of Story County or as part of the process moving over to Maple Grove. Several of those eight that you mentioned in Maple Grove, to my knowledge, still do not have power and basic utilities, and I could see something like this being utilized along those lines. Well, in my mind, even though that's in Boone County, that's a direct result of the forced move from Story County out. And so for me, I'd like to see a time horizon, and I'd like to see it more spelled out what exactly we're talking about here, if they need to use legal aid for something that occurred while they were residents of Story County or as part of the process of leaving Story County. Then it makes sense to me. If something comes up for them next month, then I don't, unless it's part of this move, then I don't know that it's appropriate to use Story County dollars in their representation.
So if you're talking timelines, how long a timeline have you got in your head?
I suggest this fiscal year, so June 30, 2018.
That's reasonable. I think if there's any wrinkles that need ironed out on a legal sense, that would be enough of a window to see it through.
And I agree with that, and what Rick said also about, you know, being very specific about what we will or won't cover, you know, what it's related to. The reason I brought up the income limit was under the concern that if we ended up having someone who didn't qualify via the direct legal aid route, if they had any money left over from the $3,000 per person allocation, that could we use that to they pay a private attorney?
That's an appropriate use of, I mean, if it's part of the move, we designate $3,000 per resident, that's an appropriate use of those dollars as I read what rules we put in, Deb.
Okay, great. I just wanted to cover the bases.
Absolutely.
On my recollection, speaking of the $3,000 now that's been raised, did we give that a sunset timeline?
We know the board needs to come back and close that out.
Since we got timelines in moving here, it's just like we kind of opened that one up. And the thing is, we took down the $1,000 this past February from the first offering. And I don't believe it doesn't, to the way I remember it, we have not said anything as far as these monies at some point stop existing to be, you know, available. I guess maybe this isn't the proper discussion for that, but we will need to bring that back.
Absolutely. Well, I just figure we're going to get to what we've still got two residents that are waiting to move or waiting to have their trailers moved. And then we've got a few residents that still are not all the way into Maple Grove. And so then I think we'll be getting to the point where we can go through some closure on that.
That'd be fun.
I ran into one of the residents this weekend, and he told me there's now a new manager over there at Maple Grove. Is that accurate?
I'm not aware of that. I know we've been trying to get in touch with an individual at their corporate office in Colorado to talk about some of the concerns there. And I know that the manager who was at the June meeting had some personal things going on, and we haven't had the best of response back from her. So maybe there is somebody who stepped in. I don't know.
I'm sorry I didn't write the name down, but there is a new person communicating with our transferees, okay, and this particular transferee still didn't have his utilities.
Probably it would be good if Aaron or Carla, because Carla's coming back to us this week, would get that contact information.
And that was Stuart I talked to.
That's good. No, because things, people change, they come go.
Right.
That would be a nice one to have.
All right, so then I would ask if we can have a motion to approve with a sunset of June 30, 2018, and clarify that this is for issues that arose when they were residents of Story County or as part of the move out of Story County.
I would so move as stated, Shelley.
Second.
Discussion.
No, I think you pretty much, in my mind, covered it for what it is, the fact that they're here at the behest of park closing. We have shown the desire to see through the successful transference of their location from one park to another. This one has come with some unforeseens, and we're addressing those.
Well, so I agree with that completely. I mean, everything that previous board and this board have done throughout this process has been to try to assist those residents moving on with their lives. It doesn't make sense to me that we wouldn't see that through to the end. And in my mind, the ability to go to legal aid if they need to is part of that deal. So I think it's a really positive thing that we're doing. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deb.
Minutes from 10:10.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Any notations?
No,
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed. Board.
As presented.
Second.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims for the 19th.
Oh, I would move as presented.
Yes. Yeah. Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda board?
I see nothing there. I would move as presented.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Public hearing items. First consideration of ordinance 265, amending 45, animal control and welfare of Story County Code of Ordinances. Sue and Deb.
Good morning.
Morning, Sue.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So recently, we've been thinking about doing this for a while, and then some things have come to our attention, things we've been involved in that we felt there were some updates that needed to be made to the animal control and welfare ordinance. And so we sat down and really talked about what we felt was, in the world of animals, I guess I'll say everything's changing just like it is with people, and we need to keep up with those changes. So we sat down and we changed some of the wording in our ordinance. We also added some things that we felt were very, very important. And I'm just going to kind of read over some of these to clarify some of the changes that were made. Under 4502, and this, again, this is ordinance 265, and we're amending chapter 45. We're going to animal hoarding. And animal hoarding is, or means, the collection, housing, or harboring of animals in filthy, unsanitary conditions that constitute a health hazard to the animals being kept, or the collection of dead animals that are not properly disposed of, or the collection of animals with failure to provide them with minimal standards of care, including but not limited to nutrition, sanitation, shelter and housing, and veterinary care. And later on in the ordinance, we can address this a little bit more, but that was the main definition that we wanted to give animal hoarding, so that we felt like we had a beginning when we felt like something like this was going on, we had kind of a guideline to go by. And then we jumped to number 8 under 4502, which is cruelty. Cruelty and neglect kind of used to be logged together as one. We separated those. Cruelty now means knowingly, recklessly, or with negligence, causing deprivation of necessary sustenance. Also includes but not limited to beating, punching, kicking, or housing animals in condition that result in chronic or repeated physical harm, overall mistreatment of animal, causing unnecessary or unjustifiable pain, suffering, or death. So that is our new defined definition for cruelty. And, you know, it's hard to, you think of situations, it's hard to include every single little thing in there, but I feel like what we've done to this ordinance is we've really broadened it, and it's something that's going to work for us. Moving down to number 14 of the same definition, we now come to neglected. And neglected means any condition where owner fails to provide for animal health or safety, including but not limited to failure to provide adequate food, water, shelter, exercise, ventilation, or necessary veterinary care to an animal, or to adequately confine an animal in a manner appropriate to its species, breed, age, and condition. And this would be something that we would still use our judgment on if we got called, but would not move forward with until we had the opinion of a veterinarian. So we would try to cover that. We've added a few small things. Chickens have become kind of a big deal all of a sudden. So we had to add the under 15B. We used to say incessant barking or whining. Now we have to add the making of other sounds common to a species, because we have chickens crowing and in the cities, and so we've kind of added those small touches so that, again, we have something to work with when we're called. Also, suffering condition. Suffering condition means any condition or situation in which the animal is in imminent danger, which may be decided by the animal control officer and, again, verified by a licensed veterinarian. So, again, we are always going to take that extra step to make sure that we have, you know, a consensus on what this animal or how these animals are being treated. And penalties, this is added quite a bit. Yes, it speaks a lot. Originally, it is a simple misdemeanor for a person to do an act forbidden or to fail to perform an act required by this chapter, which, by the way, is 4504. The penalties for simple misdemeanor are as set out in Section 903 Code of Iowa. Each act or omission in violation of this chapter shall constitute a separate offense. So if you are, if you have a herd of cattle and you're depriving them of sustenance, it's each going to be a separate charge, no longer under a blanket. In addition
to that. Stop there. So this is now going to have an application to a cattle operation, a hog operation, a feathers operation, both my neighbor.
Well, for instance, we've gotten to places before where there's some dead animals, farm animals, and then there's still some that are alive, but they're in really bad shape. So each one is going to have its separate charge.
Marty, it's interesting, but to note that actually livestock are protected by a separate part of Iowa law, and there are already cruelty and, you know, you've got to feed your livestock type rules in Iowa law. Okay, I believe it's 717, chapter 717 of Iowa Code that specifically addresses livestock. This, it would be, Sue, would you say, when the calls are coming because they're not able to either document or to assist the DNR or whatever, or let's say maybe somebody had more horses than might be...
I follow that line. It's just like, you know, you creep towards the edge.
Okay. No. This is all really in a different way covered under 717.
Yeah, and so I just I think the example there, Sue, that you used is so I'm all in on what we're talking about doing here with 45, but 45 should not apply to livestock. 17 applies to livestock.
Right.
And you got the same rules there.
Right.
But there's no inference that I can see for us on any livestock issue. Should not be any inference for us on 45.
Well, I should have said dogs.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Same kind of deal. If it was cattle, just you would, if DNR could handle
right,
it,
DNR.
You would go in, but you'd go in based on 17, not based on 45.
Yes, I should have used dogs.
And
I
up at the top, the ordinance does talk about domesticated animals.
Right.
Yeah, so just to clarify that.
Right. Of course, I appreciate you clarifying that. That was one of my primary concerns when we started down this road.
Right.
We want a very clear line there.
Right.
And I appreciate that there seems to be one.
There actually
is. I want it abundantly clear. I want it stated for the record that my support is contingent on the fact this involves a domesticated animal condition. And I like some of the wording is clearly there, but I don't want to see this as another leverage point
where
to be obnoxious to people.
And I shouldn't have said dogs. I just was trying to.
You might get a call,
you know, what we have in the past.
And
so,
three person.
Yeah. Okay, to continue, each set or act of omission in violation of this chapter shall constitute a separate offense. Each day that a violation continues to exist shall constitute a separate offense. In addition to any other penalties allowed by law, the court, as part of any sentence, may do a combination of the following. Prohibit the offender from owning, possessing, or having on the offender's premises any animal during the term of the sentence. Order that the animal be surrounded by the county ordinance control facility. Order the offender.
Should be surrendered.
We're not going to probably surround it.
That's a different animal control facility, by the way.
That's what we've got.
to the animal control facility, order the offender to obtain a mental health evaluation and following through with any recommended treatment. Go ahead.
Are we going to talk about why that's so special?
Well, hoarding, for one thing. So a lot of times hoarders, you know, it would not be unusual to find a hoarder that maybe had 60 cats, dogs, guinea pigs, whatever, in their home. And you walk in awful conditions. The animals are not treated well. There's some dead ones. There's just a whole list of things that you're considering here. And at the same time, the person may be looking at you like, I don't understand what's wrong. And unfortunately, hoarding is, they've classified it now in many places as a mental illness. You know, people seek counseling for it. And so we would want to take that extra step, I think, if we felt, or a person that was able to diagnose that maybe felt that they needed to work through something so that this was not going to happen again.
Absolutely. But let's just be clear. It's not us who are requiring this.
Right. We would.
It goes to the court. We would make the case for requiring
right.
this. But the court would get to decide
right.
may include this, may not include
right.
this.
Correct.
In fact, that was as the work group put together, and so that was this particular addition was of concern. Animal control officers and advocates throughout the country often find that they cannot get this added to their local ordinances because the attorney in charge of prosecuting, in our case, county attorney, is not willing to ask court for it or feels that is not allowed to ask the court for it. Our county attorney, Jessica Reynolds, she researched this, came back, and she said, I don't see any reason why we can't ask for this because we ask for mental health evaluations in other situations. And so without Jessica's support for that, this would not be in there, and yet this is one of the key elements needed that makes animal hoarding unenforceable, because if you find them, then they don't get it to begin with.
Well, somebody walk me through the mechanics of the fact that you have your office who has noticed that there's a suspicion that hoarding is taking place in somebody's home. You don't have access to their home if they don't grant it. Now, what happens then? It kind of stops, doesn't it?
Well, not necessarily. If there's, you know, if there's odors outside the house, if we can look in the windows and see massive amounts of animals sitting in the windows.
Well, if you're not granted permission to enter the property.
Then we would probably go talk to Jessica about possibly getting a search warrant, but that would be after we tried to talk to the owner of the animals to see if there's some way we could intervene and help. We wouldn't want to do the smackdown the first time around. We'd give them an opportunity to maybe work with us.
Okay.
And then at a later time, if there was no goal being met or nothing is changing, then we would go to Jessica and enlist her help, where at some point there might have to be a search warrant given.
Now, Sue, when there was the cat hoarding situation, Kelly, right, people could smell it outside.
Absolutely.
They're already, and so that was that a violation of Kelly's ordinance?
Well, yeah. Okay. They have their own animal control.
Right, so there's entries in.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to get to the point where the animal control gets noticed that they believe a condition exists, and then once again, private property rights, if not waived, really prevent access, and where do you go from that? Thank you.
Uh-huh. Smell is a nuisance.
So from there, we have a few word changes, nothing of any magnitude. We've changed a lot of individuals to persons, just so that the wording sounds better. We have changed under 4504, number 3, that for animals impounded more than 2, we put or more times within a calendar year, the impound fees will be doubled. And that's because we give people the benefit of the doubt all the time. But if it's a habitual thing where we're going out on the blacktop to constantly remove an animal, then, you know, this is where those could kick in. We also changed in 4504, number 6, that failure to comply with such an order of restraint, when we're talking about running at large or causing a disturbance, would be a simple misdemeanor, and we could possibly also do a civil infraction. So if this is something that we see, that we have people saying, yeah, the dogs are running on the road all the time, we get there mysteriously, the dog's never there, but we have people that, you know, see it, or if we pick it up and it happens frequently, if it happens multiple times, then we could engage a civil infraction.
Okay.
Under vicious dogs, 4509, we took out number three, any dog that snaps, bites, or manifests a disposition to snap or bite.
Why did you take that out?
Well, because a lot of times, for one thing, it's not the dog that is causing the problem. So, for instance, you have a dog in a fenced-in yard, and every day, or it's on a tie-out even, every day kids come home from school, throw rocks at the dog. You know, the dog gets to a point where, you know.
Right, but number two takes care of number three.
Well, it does.
So we
moved down to number five, which is any animal causes serious injury to a human being or domestic animal.
Right, and all I'm saying is two gives us the ability to handle it before it causes serious injury.
Correct.
And clearly
correct.
We don't want to get to five.
No, and we would always try to do that anyway.
So those will be renumbered, right? Since three goes away, four will become three.
Yep. And then in the same one where it says any vicious dog that is found in the confines of Story County shall, or found in the confines of the county shall either be kept inside residence in a secure place removed from the county within 12 hours or be impounded by the county and may be humanely destroyed. And again, this is circumstantial. It depends on what the circumstances are. A lot of times it is human error. So, you know, we instead of having a bold right across the board answer for this, we changed it to maybe humanely destroyed.
Okay.
We've added a few things on our exotic animals because we have people bringing things that, you know, several years ago we had a crocodile that we had to go take care of, an alligator in Kolo that was 6 foot long. So the exotics, people, they want them, but unfortunately they're sometimes going to extremes. I had a guy call me that was going to go to Iowa State. He's an animal science major, and he was from either Wyoming or Montana. Wanted to bring his two pet black bears with him to Story County. Was going to put them in a dog kennel. These kind of things, we don't want that responsibility. He can say they're friendly with him, but we don't know what a wild animal is going to do, and we certainly don't want that in the county. Should put in a dog kennel. Chain link is very easy to get through for some things. So we just changed some of it, like any venomous snake or reptile. A lot of people now want these scorpions, which you know, are deadly. We added the body length of a reptile, 3 feet or more. That's including the tail. And any of the big cat or wild cat species and crosses of 1/2 or more. Again, one of the things I remember most is a long time ago, we went down to Slater, and we were going to the vet there to pick up an animal, and we happened to walk in between cars that were parked in front of the vet's office because we were parked across the street, and we happened to look into this car, and there were two mountain lions, one with a pink spiky collar and one with a silver spiky collar, lounging in the back seat of this guy's car. The windows were down about this far. He was in getting medicine for him. We about jumped out of our skin. But we found out he was from Boone County. It's a whole different set of rules over there. They can, you know, but we don't want that. We just are, at this point, Story County are not ready to take on that kind of stuff. So that's why we have done this. We moved to the standards for private kennels. And so all private breeding kennels shall be required to obtain a temporary license issued by myself or our department until a state or federal license is obtained. This is for somebody that starts out with four dogs, decides they want to breed, gets up in numbers. We find out they have no housing. They're not being taken care of properly. So at that point, I'm going to call the state and suggest that the state visit them and they get a state license for doing this. Animal welfare and care, 4512. all animals shall be maintained, and we used to have with at least a minimal level of care. Some people's minimal level of care was just next to nothing. So we changed that to an appropriate level of care. Further down, you'll see number two, reasonable access to an adequate supply of clean, fresh water provided in drinking amounts at intervals suitable for the species, not to exceed 12 hours at any interval. We removed that and put on a continuous basis because in the summertime, when you have these animals outside, every 12 hours, if their bowl empties after the first hour and a half, that's not enough. So there needs to be a means to make sure that these animals are given water. Number four, if the animal is livestock, instead of adequate, there must be an access to a natural or constructed barrier sufficient to offer reasonable protection against temperature extremes, wind, rain, or snow. We have added these would include natural windbreaks such as brush or tree lines, large hay bales, pole buildings, sheds, barns, whatever. In other words, they can't stand out in the middle of the field. You can't make them go in what you've built for them or what you've provided. Like leading a horse to water, you can't make it drink, but you have to have it provided. On number five, again, it said if the animal is restricted in a confinement area for an extended period, the area shall be kept reasonably clean. We just took reasonable out and put clean. Some ideas of reasonable are 3 foot deep in manure. That's not reasonable. So we put clean and free from contaminants. A little further down, enclosures that include fencing must be designed and maintained as to minimize bruising, injuries, and provide safety to human beings and other animals. So that we kind of added to that. Sometimes the fencing is a little lax, and people use things that are very dangerous to try to make their fences with. So we've added that. And number six, veterinary or farrier care when necessary, not if necessary. I can't count the times that I've gone out to check, a lot of times it's horses, on an animal that has maybe ripped itself on a fence, and it's standing there, it's summertime, there's maggots, everything, and the person that owns the animal is like, oh, it'll clear up. No, this isn't how we're going to do this. We want it when necessary instead of if you think it's necessary. And then lastly, we will cover, this is a brand new number here, 4513, again, animal hoarding. And it reads, it shall be unlawful for any person to engage in animal hoarding. It is unlawful to collect animals and fail to provide them with a humane or adequate care, or collect, house, or harbor animals in filthy, unsanitary conditions that constitute a health hazard to the animals being kept. And then it refers back to 4504 of that section, so as to how we move forward if we needed to.
This section is also notable. There aren't a lot of counties. We're not sure any other county in Iowa has actually added this. And the key thing here is that prior, if you don't have this wording in, you can charge for each violation individually. Lexi was talking about the dogs back. Well, now talk about somebody who's got 200 cats, and there may be 4 or 5 different instances of neglect and cruelty for each animal. Documenting it, it consumes a lot of resources for animal control and for the county attorney's office. And it's nationwide. It is one reason why many local entities don't end up prosecuting for animal hoarding. Is because literally the amount of paperwork to get them in a hoarding is just individual cases. This now makes that if they meet the definition of hoarding up above that's been inserted in, one citation can be written. They can be prosecuted under one charge, and that minimizes the individual amount of documentation for each individual animal.
Super. Anything?
She answered my questions.
So, Sue, I want to really commend you on your work in putting this. I mean, there's more that need to be commended. Deb and Ethan and Loris really, really dug in and worked hard to get us to a point. I know it wasn't always easy to figure out where we needed to be, but really have appreciated your diligence in getting us to a spot that I think put Story County where we need it to be. We're not looking to big brother anybody. We're not looking to go up the doors and listen in. We're not but we are looking to reasonably protect the animals, and I'm referring more to pets than anything here, but the animals that we have here in Story County. You've been a leader in the state for a long time. I think this ordinance, if ultimately passed, makes us a leader in terms of the ordinance that we have. So, nice job. Thank you.
Morris, would it be appropriate if you made the motion?
I would move that public hearing.
Public hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So, if there's nothing else for Sue and Deb, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 265 and or Chapter 45, either one. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing, and now I'll turn to the board for action.
I move first consideration of Ordinance Number 265, amending Chapter 45, Animal Control and Welfare of the Story County Code of Ordinances, and set second consideration for Tuesday, October 24th.
I would second that.
Motion to second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes on first reading. Second reading next week. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you to staff, too, because I know you have quite a work session.
Everybody involved.
Yep. Next item is first consideration of Ordinance 266, Processes, Ordinance, Amendments. For subdivision plats, conditional use permit, and variance applications. Jerry.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
More ordinances. As Rick said, this is, we call them the process ordinances that impact the full spectrum of what we do when we get an application for a subdivision, a conditional use permit application, and a variance appeal application. So currently we follow state law, we follow past practices, but we think it's important to provide this information within the ordinance so that applicants know fully well what our full process is. It's also helpful for staff to communicate to applicants as they're requesting information about it. So what this does is it amends chapters 85, which is our definitions chapter, chapter 87, which is land division, that's where plats of survey are, subdivision plats, chapter 90 is the conditional uses, and chapter 92 is the administrative chapter, and that's where variance appeal language is. So again, we want to be able to communicate in writing what our full process is, when a conceptual review is needed, a sit down with all the departments here, when interagency staff review is needed, when staff reports are prepared, when resolutions are prepared, the role of the Board of Adjustment, the Planning and Zoning Commission, the role of the Board of Supervisors, when notifications are required, when we do publications. And so that's what this is attempting to do. We also add a definition to substantial action currently under our ordinance. If you get granted a variance, you've got 6 months to start on the project. You need to show substantial action. Well, without a definition, it's pretty hard to get to that point. We had a request that got granted by the Board of Adjustment. It was for a accessory structure setback, and prior to the submittal of the application, the pad was poured. Then they submitted the application. They sat on it for a few years and then wanted to proceed with it. Well, we didn't think that it met the substantial action requirement. So what we're proposing is substantial action means the near completion of work required for the development authorized by the permit with respect to phase development. This shall apply only to the first phase. So that's one thing. The second thing was a provision that was under the plat of survey, which addressed, it was an encouragement, it wasn't a requirement, that when you divide, that you take into consideration the natural contours of drainage ways, creeks, streams, that kind of thing. Oftentimes divisions are transecting through natural areas, so to get back to the back areas, a lot of times you're having to impact those natural resources, kind of makes it kind of difficult sometimes to use that space or to build something. But that provision was struck in by the Planning and Zoning Commission, so they supported everything but that provision. Also clarifies the submittal process requested for vacation of subdivision plats. For the most part, we're following state law. There's really two processes. One talks about proprietors, which are the property owners for the most part, and most commonly when they're requesting easements to be vacated. And then there's language that is brought about by local government, in this case the county, to vacate maybe right-of-way for roads and or alleyways. So we have language for that. We did have an interagency review and obtained additional information from the Environmental Health Department. They suggested that we add some language for adding watershed district information on subdivision plat submittals to the actual drawing. The outreach coordinator provided some additional information, which was helpful. For ag subdivisions and residential parcel subdivisions, we have criteria that you have to meet. And currently, if somebody has already done an agricultural subdivision, they cannot do another agricultural subdivision. And we've had requests to reconfigure the land, so we have provision in place to allow that to happen. Require planning staff to assist with proprietors with the property owner information on vacation. State law says within 300 feet of the vacated area, we have to notify property owners and mortgage holders, and so we're going to assist the property owners with identifying who the property owners are. We're also going to send notices to property owners within a quarter of a mile. We're going to add clarification on the effective date of variances. Variances will go into effect 30 days from the date that we actually record a document in the recorder's office. As I said, our department has followed state law for the processes that I spoke about. We've also followed past practices. But again, we think it's important to have this in writing so that when you're looking at doing, you know, making a submittal for a subdivision, conditional use permit, or variance appeal, you'll know exactly what the full process is. And as I said, it's also helpful for staff. The format that we followed in writing this was similar to the provisions that Leanne brought forward last year with regard to the rezonings, the C2C comp plan amendments, and the text amendments. So the language pattern is similar. I wasn't planning on going through every line for you. I'm going to give you a summary. This information is on the website. I have it in front of me also. But again, Chapter 85 is our definitions chapter. We're adding a definition to substantial action so that we're clear on what that is, or more clear. We had language in there under plat of survey to divide where it's practical along where there's natural resources, such as creeks, streams, and drainageways. Again, this is what the Planning and Zoning Commission struck. The ag and residential parcel subdivisions, the process for the most part is similar. It's an internal review of county departments, and ultimately they end up going to the Board of Supervisors for action. So what we have is existing language, and then where you see new, that's new language that we're adding, again, to follow the process that we're following. And so we're asking to add an amendment to allow someone who has done an agricultural subdivision to resubmit it if they want to reconfigure the boundaries. We have language now for interagency review process, notices to cities and property owners. Again, this is for agricultural subdivisions, residential parcel subdivisions. We've got language in there for the preparation of the staff report and the resolution that we do. Consideration and action by the Board of Supervisors at a public input meeting. Language on the action on the resolution. Recording along with the Code of Iowa in Chapter 35411. There's requirements to from the property owner on the consent to plat, attorney's opinion, treasurer's certificate to show that there's no back taxes and no special assessments, those items. And then the existing language for what items we need for a submittal on the drawing. And then we get into the minor and major subdivision plat requirements. We're talking about a conceptual review process. And again, these are things that we already do. We're just putting them in writing. What makes a minor or major subdivision plat submittal? interagency review language again. We send notices to cities and property owners. Again, we go a quarter of a mile from the subdivision. We notify cities within 2 miles. We prepare the staff report. It goes before the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration and recommendation. Again, we do notices to cities and property owners before the Board of Supervisors meeting. We work on the revising of the staff report, prepare the resolution that the board acts on. Again, action at the meeting by the Board of Supervisors of the resolution. We record the requirement document that's in 354.11 state law. And then there's the language in there about the submittal requirements for the subdivisions. Then we get into vacation of official plats. As I said, you've got it set out such that you've got proprietors submitting a request to vacate certain parts of the subdivision plat. Usually it's easements. So we're talking about conceptual review process. We're talking about notifying property owners within 300 feet. That comes from state law, and mortgage holders if that's part of what's being vacated. We're going to assist the property owners with that information. We're going to send notices to all landowners within a quarter of a mile. And then we're going to follow 354.22, which requires us to have two publications 14 days apart before a public hearing. And then there's language about recording a resolution and other documentation. And then it gets into the process that involves local government, in this case the county. We're going to have a conceptual review with county staff. We're going to notify utilities, property owners within a quarter of a mile. We're going to follow Code of Iowa Chapter 354.23. We're going to have a public hearing. We're going to record the resolution and other documents. This leads us into Chapter 90, which is conditional uses. We have conceptual review. The next part talks about the submittal requirements for CUPs. Interagency staff review. We do notices that go to property owners and cities. You're detecting a theme, right? Prepare a staff report. Consideration and recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission before a hearing. Notices to property owners and cities. Consideration and action by the Board of Adjustment at a public hearing. There's language about the finding of facts that they have to follow, the applicants, when they make a submittal. And then there's language in there now about petition to district court within 30 days of the recorded action. Again, this is in state law. Chapter 92, again, this is where our variance language is. Existing language talks about the role of the Board of Adjustment in reviewing variances, what is required for a variance application submittal, interagency staff review, notices to property owners and cities, staff report, a public hearing before Board of Adjustment. You've got the language on finding an unnecessary hardship that they have to prove when they make a submittal. A recording document is prepared and submitted for recording. Board of Supervisors may remand a decision, so that's in state law, but now it's in the ordinance. They can't request them to change the decision, but you can ask the Board of Adjustment to revisit it, to hear it again. And then there's the language about the appeals process in district court, and then followed up by the time period for applicants to take action on a granted variance, and they have to show substantial action within 6 months. So as far as this process, we did publications before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting September 28th. We also prepared a publication October 12th. Resolution setting the hearing was adopted by the Board of Supervisors on the 10th last week. Again, the recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission is to approve these process ordinances with the exception of that one provision that says, is a suggestion that you divide along the natural contours, which leads us into alternative one. The Story County Board of Supervisors recommends approval of the first consideration of the process ordinances amendment, Ordinance 266, with the above stated exception, and direct staff to place the second consideration of the process ordinances on the Board of Supervisors October 24th agenda. Sure. We have to answer your questions.
Before we open the public hearing, we'll take questions here. Mine is just, I want you to underscore. So when I read through this, I find it to primarily be a codification of current practices. So current practices right now are in our ordinances, but it's also be found other places in state law, in our standard operating practice. I like the idea of having everything in one place where it's reasonable to hand it to somebody and say, hey, here's the process, here's the what is. There's not no gray area, but there's less gray area, but it is not substantially changing our current practices. It's just modifying what those practices are.
Correct. Yeah, we follow state law and we follow the department's past practices. In fact, we have a sheet that identifies the full process for these types of things as well. And so we're just trying to get that in writing in the ordinances so it's very clear.
Super. Questions for Gary before we open public hearing?
Why do we use quarter mile notification? Why don't we use twice that? You're out in the country in the unincorporated, where a lot of times I would point to what you just did in Shipley's, the case study, as to notice, because the thing is, the people that came to you to readdress and visit with you, both in open meeting and private, were outside the quarter mile boundary. And I would say, I think when you move out into the unincorporated, it's a quarter mile, really, that far.
But when you get close to a city, a quarter mile, another quarter mile, so going a quarter mile to a half mile, can you imagine if you're right on the edge of Ames and you extend a half mile? I mean, you're just talking about substantially increasing the time and cost in order to notify. And I get your point completely.
I always say, too, that if these issues are important to people, people are going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Where I came from, Polk County, variances, we sent notices to property owners within 250 feet, conditional uses, rezonings, 500 feet. And you have to, I think, draw the line somewhere.
But I think we're beyond what most do at a quarter mile.
I've never heard of a quarter mile notification requirement parking here. I think we're pretty transparent in our openness. And it does add to the cost. The closer you do get, as Rick said, to an urban area, you're going to be notifying a lot more people.
Gary, in following up on Marty's question here, in the rural areas, do you post only one sign about a notice, one notification sign?
Yeah, posting in the ground for a sign is really for rezoning issues. Because it's a change to the ordinance. But we don't do that for other, like the subdivision class, because for the most part they're meeting the ordinance requirements.
Right, thank you.
Any other questions for Gary?
I had a couple, but I just...
No, it's just like, okay, I guess if a quarter mile is really being generous, I guess a quarter mile is really being generous.
Okay. So my first one has to do with the language that the planning and zoning recommended we take out or be taken out, but it's that encourage proposed subdivisions to follow along natural contours, et cetera, as it goes on. So how will all these processes that you listed out and pointing to various policies, how does that stop or reduce the incident of people going against the natural boundaries?
You know, a lot of times we provide input when we do reviews on things like that, but we thought that here's an opportunity to, and this is really for plats of survey. We have the Conservation Overlay District, which is another opportunity to protect natural resources and encourage development outside of those areas. Some days we get two or three plots of survey. Those are reviewed administratively. They don't go through any special review process before Planning and Zoning Commission, Board of Adjustment, Board of Supervisors, that kind of thing. That was our attempt to put it out there that where it's practical, sometimes it's not practical, that you should try to take that into consideration. I think they're concerned about, the impact on property owners' rights, or if maybe if there's an easement that's on two properties, you could rely on your neighbor, but to maintain that easement area. But in a true, subdivision, oftentimes that's where the drainage areas are along the common boundaries of the lots, and you do share that responsibility. But
so my follow-up on that one, and I'll move to my other one. So my follow-up is this something that the planning and zoning, that the board would ask planning and zoning to look at separately later as making more of a actual policy or an asset? I mean, is this something that you feel occurs often enough or creates a situation of enough concern that we should maybe look at it separately later on?
I think from a staff perspective, we would like to propose something that it gets to this point in the future.
Okay, thanks. Then my other question after all of this was trying to track the changes back and forth between agricultural subdivisions and residential parcels, et cetera. So, and I know that our outreach director, who was formerly in planning and development, okay, that she recommended, you know, we go one way with it. Can you please exchange, why is there a problem or was there a problem before that would say once you've subdivided ag zone property, you can't subdivide it again?
I'm not aware of any issue, really, but I can tell you we've been contacted by property owners that had ag subdivisions and they wanted to do them, but with that provision, it prohibited it. So it seems like it's a practical request.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, for instance, we just had a request the other day, and it's a family, it's a corporation that owns a bunch of ag land, and they're redividing things among the family, but they've already done an ag subdivision, and they want to keep it in agricultural land, but their only option is a major subdivision. And that's not really as conducive as it could be for preserving our farmland, which is so important for the county.
Okay, thank you for that.
Okay. Good question, though. Good. All right, we're going to open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 266. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll stop the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I move consideration of Ordinance 266, which are processes, coordination, ordinance amendments for subdivision plats, conditional use permit, and variance applications, and then set a second consideration for Tuesday, October 24.
Where are you on 8702, which is the following, the natural contours of land?
I am fine as presented. As okay.
The recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission is that we adopt this without 8702.
No, I find as presented. That's how the deletion of it is the way I understand.
Right. With the deletion of 8702. Okay.
I said.
Yep.
Okay.
So we've got a motion and a second on Ordinance 266 with the deletion of the provision 8702.2. Further discussion?
No.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We need to set a second hearing. Sorry we didn't do that as part of our first one. Marty, you want to set that for next week?
I think it did.
It was part of it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I missed that.
We're good.
Good. Cool. All set. We're 266 passes first reading, and we'll go to second reading next week.
Looking forward to that contour discussion later.
Thank you, Gary. Additional items, consideration of sending the FY18 budget amendment to publication. Lisa Marker.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Hi there.
I've been telling you, I'd be coming back with another budget amendment, and voila, here I am. So, the budget and the documentation is in front of you. I provided that. We are increasing revenues by 3.5% in this amendment. This will be the second amendment of the year, so I'm going from previous amendment to current amendment, basically.
Right.
And expenses by 10.8%.
Yeah, and let's just try to be as clear as we can on those two. The primary addition of revenues comes in the form of the TIF bond.
TIF bond.
The $1.5 million there. And then the increase, clearly spending those dollars is part of it, but also primarily carryover projects from last year.
In secondary roads.
In secondary roads.
$3.3 million. Well, $2.1 million is the carryover projects, and then another
right.
$1.4 worth new equipment and real estate and buildings you guys just approved him to go forward on, which we budgeted $1.2 million.
Exactly. So, and we budgeted one lower than it actually came in.
Right.
So.
Right.
Okay. Discussion with Markley. This is simply sending this for publication.
Done.
Okay. I take a motion.
I would move that we send to publication this proposed budget amendment. And do I need to set the hearing date at the same time?
Go ahead. November 7th.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I may have missed the hearing date here. Oh, November 7th at 10 a.m. on November 7th in the public meeting room.
Right here.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Set publication and the hearing date. Next item is discussion consideration of Resolution 1849 Gordy's Subdivision.
Hello.
Hi there,
Lenny. Let's
see. Well, go ahead. I'll be right back.
Okay. Hi. So, this is Gordy's subdivision. It's a residential parcel subdivision. It's located in Indian Creek Township. The property and the applicant. The property is owned by Teresa and Bryce Smith at 29104 650th Avenue in Maxwell, which is also the location of the subdivision. And overall, the subdivision is dividing one parcel into two, and a one-acre parcel will also be adjoined to one of the lots. There is also an alternative compliance request to allow that lot with the one-acre parcel adjoined to it to exceed our 1-to-3 depth-to-width ratio and to allow it to have frontage on both 650th and 653rd. So here is the location. You can see that it is north of Maxwell. Oh, and a new pointer. It's hard to look, sorry. It's again in Indian Creek Township. And it's hard to see, but 650th comes down behind the property here, and then it's on 650th is here, and this is 653rd behind the property. So they kind of branch off each other, and that's why we have a double frontage situation. So there are seven adjacent properties to this subject property. There are three that contain dwellings, two that contain dwellings in ag land, and you also have Woodland Cemetery here across to the west of the subject property across 650th. There are 35 parcels within a half mile of dwellings, which is pretty high. 18 parcels within a half mile could have dwellings if they applied for a zoning permit. They meet our minimum size requirements. And just a note on zoning, it is zoned A1 agricultural, but as you get down towards Iowa Center down here, you do see some ag residential and some R1 zoning allowing denser residential development in that area. This shows our C2C plan. You can see that the property does have some natural resource area on it. There is a lake located over here to the north of the subject property, and that's related to that natural resource area. There's also a tree area on the property, which we'll see in the subject, in the site photos. So just a little bit of background. This was originally a woodlot, so a pioneer woodlot. It was lot 3. And so woodlots are one of the exceptions to allow a dwelling to be built on a parcel under 35 acres in the A1 agricultural district. So that's how we have this dwelling here. It was built in 2001. Parcel B was part of this woodlot, so parcel B is the lot that will be joined to lot 1. And it was actually, eventually the woodlot was split and part of another woodlot to the south of it. It's kind of complicated. But as you can see, parcel D at least will be part of this original woodlot that's being proposed to be joined back with the rest of lot 3. In 2012, we introduced the residential parcel subdivision process, and so while this parcel was buildable because it was a woodlot, you could not further divide it to create another buildable parcel, but because we introduced, until 2012, when we introduced the residential parcel subdivision process. So that's why previous attempts to divide it didn't work out, but now we can divide it. So this is the proposed subdivision. Again, you can see parcel B is being joined to create lot 1, which is 9.54 net acres, has the existing single-family dwelling, has frontage on 650th and 653rd,
And then you also have Lot 2 to the south, which is an ag production. It will remain an ag production. There's no immediate plans to build a dwelling on that parcel.
But it will become buildable.
Yes.
If this happens.
This is just a copy of the plat. And a note on the alternative compliance request. So because of Parcel B, you've got a lot that does not meet our 1-to-3 depth width ratio. It's not the whole lot that doesn't meet this. It's just really a portion of the lot. And we also have the issue of there's double frontage on 650th and 653rd. Basically, our code on the design of lots doesn't encourage double frontage lots and doesn't permit lots that are over this 3-to-1 depth-width ratio because it's not efficient development. You know, the idea is you can't develop on the other side of that now, or you have a house that has its rear facing another street. It's not really the case here since Parcel B is not developable. And so the applicant has requested alternative compliance, which is basically a mechanism that allows us to approve a proposal that doesn't meet our current requirements if it better achieves and meets the purpose of our ordinance. And planning staff has essentially found that the purpose of the A1 agricultural zoning district is to preserve rural character, preserve farmlands, and allow farm dwellings to be developed in larger parcels. And because I know Parcel B is not developable, but if it was left separate, there might be interest in putting a house on Parcel B. It's pretty high ag value. The applicant's representative indicated that it's currently in hay production. I don't know if that will be continued in the future with the new owner of the house, but it certainly does ensure that we're not creating or leaving three parcels. It's joining another parcel. It's better maintaining the rural character of the area. So we feel it meets the alternative compliance request, we recommend that this is approved with the subdivision. So here are some site photos. This is looking south on 650th Avenue from proposed Lot 1 onto proposed Lot 2. So proposed Lot 2 is this, I think it's in Beans. So here's proposed Lot 2 again. This is looking northeast at proposed Lot 2 across 650th. And this is looking north at 650th Avenue from proposed Lot 1, so this is the driveway. You can see there's also some site distance issues due to the rolling terrain that might make having another access on 653rd desirable. This is the existing dwelling on proposed Lot 1. This is an ag building on proposed Lot 1, pasture area and horses. This is looking east at proposed Lot 1 and parts of proposed and parts of Parcel B, existing Parcel B. This is looking west at Parcel B from 653rd. And here are our applicable development regulations. I know you guys have seen these before. Just let me know if you've got questions on those. We read this to our interagency review team. The engineer did comment on the site distance issues with putting a new driveway in proposed Lot 2. That is currently, there's no new driveway being proposed, no new access being proposed on that lot, but we do have a note on the plat that any new access must be approved by the county engineer because there are those site distance issues with the terrain. A shared access easement might be required for Lot 2 with Lot 1 if they can't site it.
Oh, all the way south. They could go all the way south, but if they want to go somewhere else, it would have to be a shared driveway.
Exactly. Story County Environmental Health looked at the septic system, said it's within the boundaries of the subdivision. And we just had some notes on the natural resource area, what that means. If you do develop in the natural resource area, only 15% of natural resources can be removed. We also have notes on if development is proposed. Our stormwater and erosion control requirements will have to be met. We sent notices within a quarter mile on October 10th, and no comments have been received. And so these are just a few points to remember as you're making, your decision on this. So all requirements for residential parcel subdivisions are met. Adjoining Parcel B with Lot 1 as it prevents interest in future development of Parcel B as a separate parcel better achieves
the intent of the A1 agricultural district and thus meets our alternative compliance requirements to allow the proposed configuration of lot one longer and with double frontage. Proposed lot two will remain in agricultural row crops. There are no immediate plans, but dwelling could be constructed. A note on the access for proposed lot two, that will have to be approved by the county engineer, and either through a shared access easement or at the far south end. Those are the two options for that access. And then we do have quite a few dwellings within a mile and adjacent to the property, and quite a few parcels that are also buildable for a dwelling, and so it does meet the character of the area. And so these are your options. We recommend alternative one, which is approving resolution 1849, the residential parcel subdivision plat 40 subdivision, as put forth in subdivision 18-17 and the alternative compliance request.
Super. Questions? Good job. Pretty straightforward.
I would have to say it is a growing portion of the county. I get the sightline issue, having driven that road quite a bit. And other than that, I appreciate both property owners' commitment to seeing the process through and what your office has done. I have no problem supporting this.
Yeah, I think when you look at even just the map, let alone physically, if you were out there, it's very clear that D offers the best way to handle D is to allow this, and including the ultimate compliance of that. So I have no problems either. Also, just to let you know, County Attorney Reynolds had just slipped in because she just got my message, and she said confirmed what Supervisor Sanders said. So we're fine. That's correct. That just because our wording's a little bit off, we still are making our intent clear. And
we got a legal mulligan there.
That's right. We did. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So anyway, so thank you. I have no other questions.
I apologize for that. We talked about it yesterday and have a new process to make sure we get this
right. Okay. Those kind of things that happen, and we'll deal with them. Good job presenting this. Teresa, before we vote, I give you an opportunity to speak to us if you want. I'll tell you, the only problem I have with any of this is part of me thinks that if we deny this, that you'll have to stay and you can't move to Tennessee. And that would be the part of me that would want to deny this. Do you have anything you want to say to us before we vote?
I don't.
Okay.
I think we're a little far.
A little far down?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion on 1849.
I would move that we approve Resolution 1849, also known as Subdivision 18-17 in the document, of Gordy Subdivision.
Second.
With the alternative compliance.
With the alternative compliance.
As presented.
As presented.
Perfect. Marty seconded that.
Yes.
Further discussion? Anything to add?
No.
Really good job presenting it. Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Congratulations.
One for you, one for Marty.
Okay. That's it. All right. No agency reports, no departmental reports. First quarter financial reports. Report, Lisa Markle.
Marty.
Hello again.
Hello again.
Hello again. You have in front of you the summary of the first quarter, where we're at on our expenses, our fund balances, and our revenues. I highlighted three departments that were over 25%, because anything over 25% I highlight for you. Obviously, we've talked about the engineer already, so we know that situation. We'll be amending dollars for that. Human Services Center, part of that amendment, is also the generator.
Did you
get IT, that's just normal. I mean, they have things that come through at the beginning of the year. Right. So. Overall, we're at 21.5% of our expenditures, which is 4% below where we are in the budget year. Our fund balance, as you can see, the general fund, we're only at 20% of our expenditures there, 21%, which makes sense since we're at 21% of our overall. The general fund is the main operating fund. 30% of our supplemental fund were mainly because of insurance due at the beginning of the fiscal year. Can't get that changed from now. Mental health fund, we're only at 4% of that fund. And that's because that fund runs really low until the very end of the year when we actually pay the region most of the dollars. Rural fund is on track, and secondary risk fund is high. 42.
Primarily for the carryover.
Revenues. I didn't highlight those, did I? Oh my gosh. We're at 36% of the revenues, which obviously the first quarter is when, in September is when we start, all the property taxes don't get posted in September, so we're at 43% of the year for countywide. We'll be closer to 50% by the time I close October in.
This board's first opportunity to have a first quarter fiscal report. This is pretty standard. Generally, we run just under the 25%, and I'd say 36% revenues might be a little high, but we generally run a little high that first quarter.
Yeah.
As stuff come in. So I look at this as we're on track.
All right. Okay, thank you. Questions?
Appreciate the lack of surprises there.
We don't need any action here, do we, Mark? All right, thank you. Next is discussion and direction on the Story County Iowa economic development process and policy. Leanne.
Good morning, Leanne.
Just put that anywhere.
Put that in a shot on camera. Deb has a copy of a document for the minor. Yes, I appreciate it. What I just handed out was the goals. The goal statements only from the Economic Prosperity Chapter of the C2C plan, and I'll pull them up here as well. Really, for no other reason that you have them available, if you have questions on how today's discussion may or may not relate to the C2C plan. What I have before you today is really kind of the kickoff of discussion of what, if any, changes the board will want to consider and direct staff to bring forward at a later date for the economic development process and policies. These originally went into effect in October 2012. It's our urban renewal plan policies and process that guides the TIF process that we do annually. What I intend today is just get direction from you guys and then go back, make potential amendments, changes, and bring them back November 14th for official action discussion. So I don't know what else you want from me other than everyone hopefully has had a chance to review the policies, existing process and policies. One thing I will note, I will likely play with the process a little bit for applications just to clarify deadlines, make sure they work based on what happened this past year because this is our first year that we had the meeting that we invited potential applicants to come to. I think it might be worthwhile to have that be mandatory. That's the discussion I want to have and with Brenda and Dreyer and just think that through a little bit. But that's one thing that I have on my radar is the process. Do you have any questions?
So I want to talk about these process and policies. Clearly we brought them in, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Feels like we've amended them once or twice in that time. I think it might be appropriate for us to consider each board adopting these at the start of each year, or adopting or readopting, because this is the guiding principles, well, the policies and the guiding principles for how each board is going to operate. And what I noticed this year is we had a lot of talk of, well, this is the way we've always done it. You know, this is our standard practice, and we're not going to move off of that unless this board takes action. I think it would be completely reasonable for each board to be able, especially in this area, to take that action at the beginning of the year and go ahead and set it. And maybe it's as simple as just readopting what's already there. but it at least gives us the opportunity to talk about it. So, Leanne, where are we right now? Right now, it is what it is unless it's changed, right? And I'm suggesting that maybe we want to come back and readopt or adopt something as part of our organizational meeting each year.
Okay, so are you then saying that, because I thought today was the first time to bring forth any changes we'd like to look at.
Sure.
So that's still acceptable, but then come January 1, we would re-look at it then?
Well, so I don't think you're suggesting for a second that we're going to change anything today, right?
Well, that's what I thought. Well, yeah, that's why I'm unclear.
Okay, well, so a couple of things. One, I don't think that this is a discussion and direction, not consideration. So we're not changing anything today. Two, Morris, the way you like to do things, I would be stunned if you would think it would be okay to drop a piece of paper on us at 11:25 without any public notice or anything else and have us actually consider it.
Oh, no, I'm not interested in consideration today. In fact, my recommendation, because I understood we weren't really voting, we were supposed to introduce anything we want then for staff to review and we and anything.
And all I'm trying to do, you and I are on the same page.
Okay,
absolutely. Okay, and I appreciate, because it would have stunned me. That's where I thought you were.
No, that's not where I'm going. No, that's not where I'm going today.
And all I'm trying to do is give some direction to Leanne. My thought would be that now is our first chance to really take a look at these from an eye of, okay, what's working, what's not, what would we like included? I know you want some housing components included. And start to give direction to what our timeline and process is going to be towards setting these things.
Okay.
And all I'm suggesting is, so between now and December 1st, we kind of are where we are in this process. But then it seems to me that a natural conclusion to the discussions that need to occur would be at our organizational meeting in January. Do you think that's the right timeline? Or?
I do. I think probably in January is when you take action on the final draft of it.
Right.
Ah, okay.
So
yeah, right. You got it.
Okay. Calendar year 2018.
So in between, given like what I put out here, just it needs to be vetted by staff. Okay, then I would imagine even for us to add it in for then us for consideration, that do we have a pre-vote then in December or just the whole discussion January 2nd, 3rd, whatever that is?
Well, I think we need to deal with it a couple times. I wouldn't say pre-vote, but I would say a presentation of draft.
Right.
Okay. Really talk about anything that's potentially changing and why we might change it.
Okay.
Then with the vote to come as part of our organizational meeting in January.
Okay. Right?
And so then the document that Leanne, that Morris has produced here, Leanne, I would say this simply goes to you to consider how something like that might be built in, and it becomes part of this draft document that you're working with. Marty, I encourage you to do the same thing. This is, so actually what's funny is this is still, I think, in the font that came off of my computer the first time. You know, I've had a lot of say in where this ended up, and so it'd be really, really interesting to see what you guys come up with in terms of how we might look at advancing this process and policies.
Yes.
I'm going to be really interested to dig into housing. I'm not sure off the top of my head, Loris, exactly how that's going to fit for me in here. I think it'll be a fascinating conversation, and I sure wouldn't want anybody to read into that the board is all of a sudden making some kind of dramatic move in this, but I think it's sure worth us considering and
right.
talking all the way through.
Right. Okay, yeah, and I'd be happy, in fact, probably after staff kind of looks in and does some research. There are a couple. I know that part of the research needs to be that if we were actually going to TIF for housing, you know, put the actual take tax money from the housing itself and create that type of situation, I believe we need 40% to be low and moderate income. There are some levels there. But it was unclear on my initial just research about whether if all we're doing is taking the money from the wind farms to go ahead and pay for some basically incentives, if that needed to also be at 40%. So that's one thing I know that the staff
staff is going to need to look in. This is by no way a final proposal at all. It is based upon all the meetings I've gone to so far and taken a look at and balanced several different components. So be happy to have that discussion as the staff moves forward so that staff understands kind of where I came from, as this is a really raw starting point of where I would like to advocate for.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate you clarifying that, and that's where I thought it was when you handed out this document, and then I got concerned there for a minute that you were looking for some kind of action. So I'm glad we're not. All I'll encourage this board to remember is, so this original document, when it was the policy, process and policies, it was intended, and I think in fact has served, as a very restrictive document in terms of what Story County will not, can, and cannot do. I believe, and I think there's ample evidence for this, that it puts Story County at the head of the counties that are utilizing TIF revenue, primarily from Lynn Towers, but utilizing TIF revenue anywhere. Our policies and procedures are, in fact, more restrictive and I think make a lot more sense. We talk all the time about TIF being a tool in the toolbox, and if it's used wisely, it can be a good thing, and if it's not used wisely, as we see from some of our counterparts around the state, it can be a terrible thing. I want us to be really, really careful that we don't bite off more than we can chew any changes that we make.
I agree, and I know we've already had discussion here at the table, too, just about the, one has been about, well, how many phases, how many times does the community come back and ask for more money for basically the same type of project? We've had that discussion. So I like that we would be working toward really taking an in-depth look at this, as you say, restrictive. And that is, and still being able to say, how do we best economically serve our communities these days? So, yeah, it sounds great.
Okay. Liam, what direction do you need from us? Is that enough?
Well, I guess I do want to just talk about number one, percentage limitation, and get some direction. Is that, I'm going to pick on that, but then overall, is there anything else in here that you would like to see staff come back with different alternatives? Specifically that 50%, is that something you want staff to look at different alternatives, or that's comfortable where we're at, any drafts would have?
So I'll speak for me personally. I'm willing to look at anything, but it's going to be a really high bar to convince me that we're going to move beyond the 50%. And the rationale for the 50% is pretty simple. One, it makes sure that Story County can reliably meet its obligations if we're going to bond for something, right? Two, it allows for growth for all ranches, including Story County, as we realize increases in property value. So if you tip it all the way to 100% or even close thereto, you get no growth over the time of that tip. This way you're getting at least half of whatever that growth would have been. And I think there's a tipping point in there right at about 50% between what's appropriate and sustainable and what's not. That said, I'm willing to talk about anything. That's just my philosophy on why we're there.
Okay, so now, but that's a real specific thing she's just asked for now. I mean, that's back to, like, I guess you were looking at what I was putting in initial discussion.
Yes.
Okay. Well, actually, but that would be a discussion we really would have later on when we start to boil down onto this.
Sure.
All right. My initial comfort level is to leave it where it is, but but that doesn't mean when we get into the discussions it would change. Where I'm interested in when it comes to the percentage is I have been asked by a township trustee, and this was actually at our quadrant meetings this spring, okay, if in fact townships could be exempted from our TIF. And I came across a piece of reading that read to me like that you could exempt a particular entity from it. So that I would ask that staff do research on that.
What was the request for the exemption? To what end?
Actually, it was based upon, we can barely pay our bills now, and now we've got this whole E911, the whole that we're going to absorb costs for our volunteer fire department for this communication thing is what he said. Okay, so they said, or rather, as you know, previously, that we know that already the townships are out there looking at the same thing that I think everyone is, whether it be ISU police or whatever, when this new E911 communication system comes up. So I, my request to staff would be look about, is it in fact, is it possible to do that? Whether we want to or not is another issue, because that gets into, well, then why can't I be exempt? And why can't I be exempt? I understand. But it was a question that was asked by a township official, and I said I would bring it up when we start discussing about what our rules would be for this.
Okay. Liam, what further direction do you need?
I guess, as Laura said, if there have been areas that have not worked well, or you have concern, or you want additional information, research, if you have that today or in the coming weeks, I have ample opportunity to do research and prepare it, not necessarily in draft format, but enable a guide discussion so that you guys can give some direction back to me on how to go forward.
And you said you're gonna do some potential tweaking of the timeline, not the steps in the timeline, but when they occur.
Possibly the steps too.
Okay.
Possibly making that, and I still want to think about whether that pre-application conference would be a mandatory requirement.
Okay.
That I think there's a lot of benefit to having that, but I want to weigh that.
Okay.
The cost of that a little bit in my mind before I'm to the point where I'm making recommendations.
All right. So then I would ask, so Supervisor Olson has weighed in with her documentation, but I would ask, Leanne, if you would find time to spend with Supervisor Chitty and just go through kind of the thought of how we got, here's the document, I know you've dealt with it, I know you digested some, but this will be your first chance to look at it from a perspective of, okay, what kind of things might I want to tweak? Might I have interest in us talking about? If you do that, same thing with Supervisor Olson, although I suspect that we see kind of where you're wanting to go with this. I'm actually really good with how it is, as you would expect. But we'll go from there.
I'd like to maybe, if it's comfortable, I certainly think maybe Brenda and you, and maybe, I don't know, somebody else, that you can think about who else might want to help weigh in on this and ask questions. Because all I put out here was the bare bones of here's a very, very raw type of idea based upon different meetings, you know, attending, et cetera, some information I've collected. But I'm certainly, you know, if you guys could ask any other questions about where'd you get this or where's do I need look if of this, and then I can walk yeah. away after that.
So I'd ask if we would have a chance to put this on one of our agendas probably early December, just to talk about where we are and where we think we're headed for consideration when we get to the 1st of January. Good? Got one more thing? Okay. Next item is public forum number 2, opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything. We're not going to take any action at this point, but we might in the future. Anybody? See no one moving to the microphone. Liaison assignments, Marty.
Maybe you all had that mission critical introduction here last week. The three of us, we did it ministerially. Morris was just alluding to it. It will be a heavy financial lift by all parties within the county. We are dealing with a system, quite frankly, it's surprising that it still exists and is operable, so it needs done.
Basically, we've got 10 cans with strings tied to it. I mean, kind of is what we're dealing with.
And we don't even have strings that'll get as far as the county reaches in some places. I had a DCAT meeting on Saturday, or on Friday. We had the ability with some residual dollars to move it on a funding proposal into some corners that I think, when we do the announcements to the recipients, they'll be pleased. I had an NEDC, Community Economic Development Committee meeting summit here last week, kind of getting a feel for the lay of the land as it exists. LaVon Schultz came to us and said that she will be stepping down after 20 years as director. We will be, yeah, I know, hard to believe, but we will be doing a timeline in regards to applications and searches and more to follow. Got asked, because I don't know why, to be the voice of Nevada on a bus tour for Leadership Nevada, so I spent an hour, almost a half, driving through the town here discussing its history, its growth, and its future. It was interesting. I just got done with the county shed meeting yesterday. We are forming up a group that will take into account the facilities, the sheriff's office, and IBRM as far as storage and space needs, and we were looking to site it out at the old county home, as I would call it, my neighborhood, or the shooting range, as you might call it today. And that is the process that we will be bringing back. We have it listed now on our CIP and addressing it, and on a siting basis it would be out at the Justice Center, but we're thinking about reconfiguring that. The board will speak to it at some point here in the coming future. On a follow-up, had good news out of last week's Board of Health meeting, as we have found ourselves, as you heard earlier at the start of the meeting, that we have been able to bring the human component virtually to a close at the Crestview facility, which is, I think, a measure of success that this board collectively, individually, worked to see done. And the thing is, we're not, you know, we still have an invested interest in the outcomes of these people as they left this facility in our county, but we are still with them. The DNR will be taking an oversized presence with the property owner, and I look to see in 2018 this facility moving out of what it's been for some time into something else.
Well, you and Ethan did a great job leading us through what was a really, really tough process, and I'm really glad that we absolutely see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it does not appear to be a train coming our way. Thanks, so, Marty,
who inherits that light now? Is it the DNR? Is it really in the DNR?
We want to have a presence in the fact that we still have coding. You know, the property owner still has coding obligations to the county.
Okay.
And that still exists. I mean, you know, Jerry, if he wants to step back up and talk about what his department does as far as notice of violations and citations, what we're holding, what we have in advance. Because the DNR, we had a conference call with some individuals here, and they are going to be addressing the staging out as it is, because with the asbestos component, with some of these elderly structures, that it will be an elaborate process, and I don't, I'm glad the county doesn't have to be part of that. It will just happen as that property owner wants to do it and has the means to do it. So it will be changing slowly but surely in a way that I think that the community will receive it.
Great.
So, thanks for all the help. Thanks for the votes. Thanks for, I know it was a little bit of discomfort when we provided dollars, but it was the right thing to do. I can't say enough about Human Services, Deb, Carla, Aaron, and everybody that put a touch on these people, because they were the most modestly equipped in our community. And the thing is, we went to them when they probably had no comfort in coming to us. I think the success will be measured in ways that I don't think that we might necessarily see it, but I think we have made some lives better, and we had no guarantees of expectations or outcomes, but we did our best. And we're not done, but we're almost done, and that's a good thing.
Great. Thank you. Yep. Yeah, thanks
for seeing
that. The Historical Society in Story County had their annual meeting last week, and I was able to attend. The other two of you were tied up. They send their sincere thanks for the funding they've gotten in the past. Always would like to point out gracefully and graciously that they could use more.
Okay. They're the only entity
that could
use more.
But it was interesting in listening to a couple of the reports. By the way, I brought back written reports, which I will give the staff to make copies for all of you. Okay. And they discussed some of their activities, of course, they've had. And some of them actually are involved with physical needs that they have that I don't know whether they would want to talk to their communities about submitting for something, you know, as an economic development tool or whatever. It's an expanded version. But so they were very, very grateful, and they understood that your needs to be elsewhere was not a message to them. And as always, Slater's a great host, great homemade goodies. Booth met last week, and coming back to you, Marty, there was a presentation there from a new employee from United Way on a new reading initiative. And DCAT's going to fund that, I understand, or provide money for that. Okay.
Proposal to put additional dollars into that. Yeah, that's one of the things. We had a listing of what we did. We knew the dollars we started with. We had programming requests, and we were picking. We didn't have everybody there. We just barely met quorum. So I think it's something that will come back. We have a December 8th meeting. Spence was dealing, you know, the chair was dealing with something in Ames High. Couldn't get away. Darren from DHS could be there. So we thought in the lack, with the lack of everybody present, we thought all parties should be heard. So we kind of did a rough selection process, but we will bring when everybody's present, we'll do the
great, because it did come up at Lewis, which of course does early childhood Iowa money distribution, whatever, and the director, Marion Cressy, is on one of the work groups for that initiative going forward, but we want to make sure that we're not duplicate funding, almost like a mini asset, so who knows where that might go, and so I just bring that up. Tonight I'm going on a bus tour. I'll be up at Story City, and they do their annual economic tour by bus, and I've been on it a couple times before. So tonight we're going to go to Bethany Manor, all of the renovation, and then also I believe their electric plant. So I'll be doing that. That's pretty much the highlights. So we're good.
Outstanding. Okay. There's nothing else. I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.